welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Nittany Blues Podcast, where we talk Penn State football, basketball, and all things Nittany Lion athletics. Thanks so much for joining us here on this Wednesday evening. We've got a lot to talk about in this particular episode. We've got a lot of transfer portal news. We've got stuff from the men's basketball team, other college football news that you're likely already aware of. And maybe we'll even get into some of the Eagles a little bit. We've got the NFL playoffs coming up here in a bit. Our Eagles have thrown us for a loop, so maybe we'll vent about them a little bit. But
it's a sore conversation. They'll lose. That's where I'm at. Like,
maybe. But yeah, let's get to first things first, though. So we are recording this somewhat shortly after Penn State dropped a close one on the men's basketball side to Northwestern. So Vince, how are you, man? Good to see you. What did you see out there? You were at the game, and how's life?
Life is good. It's busy as ever, only getting busier, but it was nice to slow down for a couple hours and enjoy the basketball game. Penn State, despite the loss, I think this is the best game they've played by far throughout the course of this basketball season. Early on, especially, you just saw just harassing pressure from this Mike Rhodes defense. And this was the defense we were expecting to see. And just they were attacking Northwestern early, getting a lot of, you know, steals and creating a lot of turnovers. Ace Baldwin was all over the place. I'll have to look up the stat here in a minute for how many steals he had, but I was thinking, like, man, if he gets like 10 points and 10 rebounds, like, he's gonna get a triple double with like steals, like, which is insanity. Like, nobody does that. So those are some good things I saw. Rebounding was a lot better today. That was something that was not, I thought, I'm not looking at statistics or anything, that's just something I thought they did a lot better, especially in the first half of the game and early in the second half. You also saw early on when they were creating a lot of turnovers, the defensive rotations, which we've been talking a lot about, they're finally starting to do better with that. So that means if, you know, you're guarding your man and you get beat, one of your teammates rotates over to guard your person, then someone else rotates over to guard another person. And the person you're leaving open is someone who's supposed to be in the blind spot, you know, the person who's driving to the hoop. So their defensive rotations early on, that's the best I've seen them play. So those were things I was really excited about. The downside is just they still can't shoot threes. You saw them in Michigan State. They were 3 for 29, just above 10%. And that's kind of how it was tonight as well. So they ended up finishing the contest 3 of 17, 18% from three. Northwestern, that was the big difference today. They shot 7 of 12. They were 58%. So kind of strange to see Northwestern not shooting more threes, especially with that success rate. And maybe a little bit surprising. 17 threes isn't a ton. And Penn State, they took mostly open threes that were good. Like, they, a lot of catch and shoot threes, a lot of like, okay, they took one dribble, bounced their feet, and like it left their hand, it looked good. It just didn't get into the basket. And one of the threes they made, like, Kanye Clary, like, dribbled it off his foot, almost picked it up, and just nothing but net, perfect right in the middle. So it was kind of crazy that was the one of all the threes that went in. But at the end of the game, they probably still could have won this one despite the lack of 3-point shooting. They out rebounded Northwestern 29-8 and 8-2 in the offensive rebound margin, but they just had some issues. They were missing some layups that they were making earlier in the game, those closer shots. And that, unfortunately, you know, was the kind of the nail in the coffin that ended Penn State's hope of beating Northwestern for, I believe, the fourth time in a row. I believe we beat them three times last year. I think we beat them twice in the Big Ten season and then in the Big Ten tournament. So, you know, definitely a big revenge game for Northwestern. So total steals were 14 today for Penn State. So when you're playing a good a good school like, you know, Northwestern, those numbers are great. Guess how many steals Ace Baldwin had of the 14?
I'm going to go with 8.
You are right. It was 8. Did you look that up?
No, I just guessed.
Yeah, so really impressive. Like he was all over the place getting those steals. So, and those were some highlights. Q had a nice game. Kudus Wahab, 13 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 of 5 shooting. I think his play in the post has really improved. I think that was the best I've seen him play. So I was really pleased with his performance. Nick Kern was awesome off the bench tonight. 14 points, 7 rebounds, 6 of 9 from the field, being really aggressive and driving to the basket. And both Ace and Kanye were able to find him when he was making cuts. So he had an awesome game tonight. Yeah, those were definitely the highlights. And then offensively, Kanye Clary, for me, he's been the biggest like surprise this year in terms of things I was not expecting to see. Like, I knew Kanye was good. He was coming off the bench right there. He was in the rotation later in the season. I didn't know how Micah Shrewsbury didn't have him in the rotation early on just because of how good he's doing now. But, you know, I think Kanye's career high last year is maybe 13 points, and you might see him get 5 or 6 points coming off the bench this year, you know, last year. But this year, he's just like, if you get a sports bet and the over under points for Kanye Clary is like 19, just bet the over. Like, he's good for 20 points. And it was happening early in the season against non-conference opponents. He was doing that. And I was like, okay, great. You know, when you're a 5'11 guard, you're able to do that. If you're skilled like he is against, you know, lower competition, where you're not going against these, you know, 6'5 guards who are just as quick as you. But, you know, Big Ten play has come. He's gone to the big tournaments and hasn't slowed down a bit. So he is definitely like standout performer for me, you know, 25 points above his season average, 7 for 13 from the field. So really efficient, 10 of 10 from the free throw line, which is huge. I think that's another positive tonight. They're pretty good from the free throw line. They were 19 for 24, good enough for 79%. Typically, 80 is what a good team shoots from the line, and 90 or better, you got a really good team from the line. So if you're a head coach, you want to see 90, but, you know, 80 you'll live with. So line was pretty good tonight. Had some turnover issues. They had 13 for the game. Northwestern had 18, so they won that battle. But yeah, overall, this was a, you know, really competitive game and fun game to be at. And I think that if Penn State can become competent from three and get up into the 30s, low 30s in terms of shooting percentage, like that 33% mark, if you're making 1 in 3 from three, that's, you know, that's decent. They can get up to there. Yeah, I think this can be a middle of the pack team in the Big Ten, and maybe one that could make some noise and maybe try to push to the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament if they can peak at the right time.
Very good. So yeah, I mean, you're not going to find a more thorough breakdown than that. So thank you for that, Vince. So let's stick on basketball here for just another moment here still, because we haven't talked about Penn State's previous game to this, and that was the big comeback win over Michigan in the Palestra. So you want to just kind of give us the couple minute breakdown of like that game and the significance behind it, just beating a Big Ten opponent of the likes of Michigan and stuff like that. So what did you see? Because I know you were tuned in.
Yeah. So for all of my friends who are, you know, part of that Fire Franklin crowd, he can't be Ohio State and Michigan. Well, here you have it. You got a basketball coach who's done both in his first season, Mike Rhodes. He's 2-0 against Ohio State and Michigan. So even though it's definitely been a season of ups and downs for Penn State basketball, especially with, you know, 3 pretty close losses here over the course of the season, Palestra was a nice win. The Palestra is a really special place. The most NCAA tournament games have been played there. Dr. J's played there. Wilt Chamberlain, Kobe Bryant. It's kind of Philly's version of Madison Square Garden. Just has a lot of history. So I think it's something that's really special that Penn State players get to do every single year. After the game, Ace Baldwin Jr., you know, was stated saying, "I wish we could play every home game here." It's just, it's a special environment. It has the, you know, Philly energy. It's just, it was a good game for the team. Looking back, to earlier in the week, you know, playing at Michigan State. Really rough performance. They were 3 of 29 from 3. They got blown out by 30 points. And early on in this game, it was kind of looking like that's the direction things were going versus Michigan. Things were really not rolling offensively for Penn State. They were really struggling. But the good news is Michigan didn't capitalize. They didn't kick Penn State when they were on the ground. So Michigan kind of got up to that 10-point lead relatively early towards half, and it got to 14 points at one point, but it was kind of like the Ohio State game. They seemed to flip a switch, and things got going offensively. They slowly came back. This one wasn't quite down to the last minute like the Ohio State game, but they worked their way back into the game. And then something that I saw that I love, I think at one point they ended up getting the lead to 10 points, and they just shut the door on Michigan and made it hard for Michigan to try to claw back. And it was kind of one of those things you saw. They were up 10 points with 6 minutes and you start feeling pretty good. And it was 5 minutes and they're up 9. You're feeling good. Like 2 minutes, they're up 8. So that was just something you love to see from Penn State. They got ahead and they didn't let the other team get back in it. Now that did happen tonight at home, unfortunately, against a good Northwestern squad led by Boo Booey. Really good. One of the best players in the Big Ten, in my opinion. So, you know, tough loss, but you know, this Northwestern squad is a team who beat number one Purdue. So at the end of the day, this home loss, while it did stink, it did come to against one of the better teams in the Big Ten. So I don't think it's the end of the world. It obviously hurts a lot though, because home games are, it's tough to win on the road in the Big Ten. That's just a statistic that's out there. Not many teams do it. So it would have been nice to get, especially if you're Penn State. Saturday, you're playing Purdue at 2:15 at their place. So that'll be a really tough matchup for them that they probably won't win. And then they got number 15 Wisconsin coming to the town. It'll be a 9 p.m. tip off in the Bryce Jordan Center on Tuesday. So, you know, all in all, you know, that's kind of how it's been for Penn State basketball, some highs and lows, which is to be expected in a, you know, with the first year coach, and very similar to Micah Shrewsbury's first year, in my opinion. So I do think he'll probably end up finishing around the same amount of wins in year one. And I think year two, especially if a lot of guys are staying and he's able to bring in some more talent, I think you could see Penn State grow together. The defense will get better. Offense, you know, there'll be good communication there, and then they'll grow as a unit. So I think Mike Rhodes is a good hire, and I think you're going to see good things going forward, similar to what you did with Micah Shrewsbury in year two.
Good stuff. Yeah, I think that's a solid assessment so far. And just a, you know, little additional anecdote with them playing Purdue and Wisconsin here coming up. With the loss to Northwestern, they dropped to 8-8. So they're at exactly .500 record right now. So, you know, with two very tough opponents coming up, that could kind of put them behind the sticks a little bit for that .500 record. So, you know, just another kind of thing to monitor, because, you know, these wins come at a premium, like you said. So you gotta kind of take advantage of them where you can.
Yeah, it was definitely a huge loss for them not to capitalize tonight. But, you know, hopefully they get in the gym and are working on those threes, because, you know, you look at it against Michigan, they shoot 7 for 23, 30%. That's what they needed to get a win over Michigan. Now, Michigan's been down this year. So, you know, you take that with a grain of salt. They are one of the weaker teams in the Big Ten. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. Like, hopefully they improve. And, like, the shots all look great tonight. Like, I couldn't believe they weren't going in. Like, I'd see the shooter's feet set. They looked great. Stroke looked good. And it didn't sing. Like, there weren't many, like, threes. Like, why did you shoot that? Like, it was just, you know,
they just weren't falling.
Just weren't falling. And if you look at Northwestern here, they're 12-3 on the season, 3-1 in conference play.
Pretty good.
Definitely one of the better teams in the Big Ten. And, you know, you got Purdue, who's 3-2 in Big Ten play. They must have lost recently, because I believe they were 14-1 last I checked. So off the, maybe while you're talking, I'll look up that stat. And, you know, Tuesday, you got Wisconsin, who's 11-3 and 3-0 in Big Ten play. So definitely next week is going to be a grind for Penn State basketball, and they're going to have to bring their A game. Like, to beat those types of teams, like, you're going to need to shoot 40%+ from three and 90%+ from the free throw line. Like, you got to be on your game if you're playing Purdue and Wisconsin.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's kind of amazing just the level of consistency that the Big Ten has achieved in basketball, because, you know, Purdue just always sneakily is top three in the rankings. You know, it's just like one of those things where, like, you think of like the college basketball blue bloods of like your Duke, your UNCs, your Kansas, your Kentucky, and all this stuff. You don't necessarily like swing your mind to the Big Ten, but they're always there and they're always so solid. So, you know, I just think that, you know, when you look at a program like Penn State, you really don't on the surface appreciate just how difficult that schedule is every year. So, you know, you come in and you say like, oh, you know, like these are all football schools or this, that, or whatever, but there's some really solid basketball out there too.
Okay. So yesterday, number one, Purdue got curb stomped by Nebraska. They lost 88-72.
Wow.
They got it beaten. But that's crazy. The Big Ten, like these, it's always tough to play on the road in the Big Ten for some reason. I don't know why. Like Michigan State, while it's a blue blood program for sure, they're 1-3 in the Big Ten and 9-6 overall. And they just beat Penn State by over 30 points.
Yeah.
And like they're at the bottom, like we're above them in the Big Ten and they beat us by over 30 points. Like it's a very bizarre conference, but I do think Nebraska, like I want to say like maybe it was like 2 or 3 years ago, it was our last game of the season and last home game, and Nebraska only had like one Big Ten win the entire season, and they just lit Penn State like the heck up, and we lost by over 30. And like Kev Ajayi was like in attendance for that game after he committed to Penn State, and I don't know, maybe then when he was like, oh, I don't know about this, and we didn't see him after 1 year. So
yeah,
so it's they're one of the programs I kind of thought could be good, and they must be, you know, really starting to hit their stride at that point, because they're 13-3 on the season and definitely looking like an NCAA tournament team
for sure. Well, there you go. Yeah. But cool. No, this is good stuff. Lots of basketball still to come, just with, you know, football now officially being over at the college ranks. So we got tons of basketball talk here to come. But got anything else before we move on to some football transfer portal news?
No, we just had to talk about the Michigan losing before we talk about them winning. Got to get the good stuff out there first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, got to make sure that note is out there in the airwaves. But
at least we can beat Michigan at something.
There we go. Yeah, that and wrestling. I'll bet you we got them in wrestling, man. Like the squad looks good. Just to take a quick little sidebar to wrestling, they recently squared up with Oregon State, I believe it was, and this was meant to be.
They took the Beavers to the woodshed, pun intended.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, this was meant to be like kind of one of those good early tests for number one Penn State, because they are a ranked program, historically good program, and stuff like that. And Penn State just annihilated them. And Penn State has a freshman at 125 who, I don't remember his name off the top of my head here, but the kid's the real deal. He beat a ranked wrestler from Oregon State in the first bout of that duel to kind of set the tone for Penn State. This kid is like, he's pretty good. He's like been wrestling really well. And I think it's just, you know, just another kind of feather in Kale Sanderson's cap to the way that he's able to develop some of these guys. So, you know, even though Penn State is going to sorely miss guys like Shane Van Ness to injury, to have that kind of depth and that continual development, that's just like what championship programs are all about.
Yeah. And I feel like they're kind of like Georgia, where it's just like they get the best guys every single year, and like they don't mind having to wait. You saw Georgia and Florida State, both teams are playing with their second strings, and like Georgia just took them to the woodshed. Like it was, you know, a massacre, like a beatdown, like pummeling. Like it was bad. So I feel like Michigan almost in terms of, you know, the way things played out, I think that like things played out as well as they could have for Michigan just to be able to avoid Georgia in the college football playoff.
Oh, seriously. I mean, that is the only team that they, you know, like it's a coin flip, you know, because they play so similarly. They're both so physical. They're both so good everywhere on the defense that, you know, it would have been strength against strength in that game. But yeah, but we can, you want to talk national championship now, or do you want to talk transfer portal and then national championship?
Since we're on it, let's just stick with the national championship. It's just tough to watch if you're
sure was
any other team in the Big Ten, just seeing Michigan go out there and look dominant despite the sign stealing scandal. And I guess it's easy to win a national championship when you have the other team's plays. Maybe we should do that.
I know. It's like the old adage, as we keep saying here, if you're not cheating, you're not trying hard enough. And, you know, I mean, it's funny because immediately after the game was over, everybody was like saying this, there was a line drawn in the sand, and you were either on the asterisk side or you were on the non-asterisk side as far as like the legitimacy of this title is concerned. And today, the president of the NCAA, I guess, put out a quote that said that Michigan won its title fair and square, which, you know, just given the state of the NCAA these days as an organization and as like a steward for college athletics and stuff like that, I'm not exactly sure how much weight a quote from a guy in position like that holds, you know, just given how stupid the NCAA is about a lot of different things. So clearly he's kind of made his mark. But yeah, I mean, I think it's I think it'll be interesting. I mean, this whole thing is not over. You know, the NCAA is still like conducting their investigation, I'm pretty sure, unless something has changed. And there's even additional like notices of allegations coming out about like recruiting violations and everything like that, which, you know, so who knows like how, like what all is going to happen once all this comes to a head, which, you know, the whole recruiting violations thing I thought was actually kind of interesting because of a stat that I forget who put it out here today, but basically, when you look at like the stars of the guys who were on the team as far as their profile as recruits, like this was not like Georgia and Alabama and stuff like that. Like there's blue chip talent everywhere, but you know how like Alabama and Georgia has like five stars everywhere. Like Michigan didn't. I think they had like one 5-star on defense, and like the rest of it, it was just like pure development and coaching and guys like staying in the program. I mean, they're going to lose a lot of talent to the NFL. But, you know, even though you love to hate them, like they are kind of a testament that, you know, like when you get the perfect storm of like culture and togetherness of your team and stuff like that, that you can achieve like the highest things imaginable in college football, which, I mean, again, pains me to say it because I wanted so badly for Washington to win this game, even though I picked against them in the chip. But yeah, I mean, it was for lack of a better way to describe it, the game kind of went down the way I thought it would. I just thought that Michigan's defense was going to prove to be too much for Washington. I just thought that they were like too reliant on like the big plays at times. And, you know, what really kind of struck me actually, and I want to get your thoughts on this, is that as I was watching the game, it almost reminded me a little bit Penn State's game against Michigan, in the sense that it was like, it was a one score game for a while, and the defense was keeping them in it. And Washington's defense, like once they woke up and realized, oh yeah, we should probably tackle Donovan Edwards, like was keeping them in the game, like within a one score game. And then, but the offense just couldn't make up the difference. And then Michigan's running game finally like woke up, and then it was lights out. So, you know, the difference obviously between Washington and Penn State is that Washington has the chunk plays in their repertoire a lot more than Penn State does, with, you know, arguably the best wide receiver group in college football. But it was just kind of uncanny, like how similar those two games were. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do feel like maybe it was a little bit in reverse. Like, I feel like in our game, we played really tough in the first half, and then the wheels fell off and you started seeing those big runs. Whereas like Michigan was just like running down the ball, like right down the middle for 40 yards a carry. And like, they didn't, it was kind of like when they played us, you're right. Like they didn't need to do anything creative. It was just run the ball in different directions. And really surprising to see Washington not like be able to stop it early. Like, I'm not sure what else they were expecting Michigan to do based off of the film this year. Like, I don't know, like for Michigan, maybe it's easy if you know the other team's plays or whatever, but the gap discipline was just terrible for Washington early on. And then they fixed it. But like, if they play a full four quarters, like the last three quarters of the game, they were fine. It'd be a different game, but since they got off to that slow start, you put them so far behind the eight ball, they couldn't climb back. And, you know, on top of that, you have them settling for field goals, like after just moving the ball down the field effortlessly. Then there were times where you had dropped passes, and it reminded me of like Penn State's receiving core at times, you know, not coming down with the big play when it needed to be made. And then when there was a big catch, there'd be like a hold or something of that nature. It was just a lot of tough things. And I feel like Washington almost beat themselves at times. And
oh, like, totally.
Like plays were there to be made and like the throw was off or the receiver's not catching the ball. Like it was good coaching by Kalen DeBoer. And like you got his guys open. Like that's your job. Call a play that will get your guys open. But, you know, it comes down to the players to make the play, right? Like that's all you can do. So, like, do I think Michigan's better? Like, yeah, I think they're the better team, but I do think if Washington does some things differently, you can definitely see them, you know, beating Michigan. And yeah, you are right. It is kind of crazy that, you know, this is a roster with a lot of three-star guys that are coming together and winning a national championship. And it's just like, okay, well, why can't Penn State get that kind of coaching and stuff? So I don't know. I don't know if Franklin needs to, you know, show the team a pack of wolves hunting or, you know, pack of Nittany Lions, or if we need to get Drew Aller to do some meditating before the game or get him brushing his teeth with his left hand like J.J. McCarthy. Like, I don't know if that's what it's going to take, but maybe that's something to do that they'll try in 2024.
Yeah, why not? But, yeah, you know, just like one team just having a game plan, executing it to near perfection, taking care of the football, and the other team did not. Yeah, I mean, especially like early on in the game, it really just didn't even seem to be too crazy, like what Michigan was doing in the running game. It just seemed like they, you know, those couple of times, like the gaps just weren't covered on those long Donovan Edwards runs. And then the other times, you know, Michigan was just using like a little bit of motion. And for some reason, it just seemed to throw Washington's defense in like into dysfunction. Like they didn't know like which man like each of them was covering, and then it just turned into some like chunk plays on the ground and stuff like that. And, you know, but then in the middle of the game, you know, once Washington was like, oh yeah, like we can actually stop them, then it, you know, it became a much more interesting game. And, you know, what I think is kind of interesting, you say about, you know, like Washington beat themselves in a lot of ways. Michael Penix also said something very similar. I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but he kind of, you know, a little bit of like gamesmanship maybe, but he's like, it didn't really feel like it was anything they did. We just kind of like beat ourselves and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It kind of felt like a little bit of like what they did.
It was both.
They pummeled him. I'm pretty sure he's got at least like two broken ribs with the way that he was holding his side at the end of that game. I mean, he looked like he was in pain.
Yeah, there were definitely times where Michael Penix had to just get rid of the ball because there's a 300-pound guy running at him. Like, that's just like, at that point, like, if that's happening, you just try to get rid of it and survive the hit, right?
Exactly.
That's just, like, natural human instinct. But,
right.
Yeah, it's just, you know, one of those things. That's how the game played out. And it's really wild to just imagine that, you know, Michigan didn't have to do anything, like, crazy or special or creative. Like, it was just guard your guy on defense and run the ball. Like, that's the biggest thing they did. And if there's a weakness on Michigan, it's got to be special teams. Like,
yeah,
they got like special teams put them in some dangerous situations, you know, especially on that punt return. But yeah, it's just crazy to think that they're doing that. And if you look at Penn State, I really think they need to be adopting this model almost. Like, you got Nick Singleton, Catron Allen. We seem to be going away from the run when we're getting a good run average, and it just doesn't make sense. Like, we need to be, maybe this is the culture that Penn State needs. Maybe they need to adopt that attitude and say, you know, F it. We don't care. We're running the ball down your throat. And if it doesn't work, well, you know, that's how we're going to lose.
Yeah. Like,
Maybe that's an attitude they need to develop more, because I know fans are like, oh, we need to be more creative, unpredictable. And then I'm just like, you know what? Like, maybe stop trying to be too fancy or trying to outthink everybody. And maybe we just need to just take pride and just toughness and saying, hey, we are going to out physical you, and we are going to bully you. And just these long drives are going to wear your defense down. And then that's what, where the explosive runs are going to come from afterwards. So I think that's a good mindset to adapt. And maybe that's something that Penn State might look forward to in the 2024 season.
Yeah, definitely. Two things on that. One of my old sports communications professors who I still follow on Twitter, he was saying about how, you know, Kotelnicki actually is very much a run first kind of guy. Like when it comes to offense, like the spread of run to pass during his time at Buffalo and then at Kansas was hovering almost at around 55% in favor of the run. So, you know, if he has the weapons, he's not afraid to use them. So that's one thing. And two, you know, I was thinking about that a lot more too, you know, just watching like Michigan just stick to this run first philosophy and stuff like that. And thinking about, you know, like we always talk about, okay, we're going away from the run, we're not going back to the run and all that stuff. And like, it's like, I get that, you know, you want balance and you want, you like, you don't want to become like too one dimensional and all that stuff. But in my mind, you know, when I see the three, you know, most glaring offensive performances against Ohio State, Michigan, and then against Ole Miss, it just, you know, we were, in my opinion, just leaving Drew out there to kind of figure things out, and it just wasn't working. And we kept trying to go back to that well, and it wasn't working again and again and again. So my thought process behind that is like, okay, instead of trying to like pass the ball three times, why not put it in the hands of Nick or Katron three times? Because it's like, would you rather go three and out with Drew throwing the ball and, you know, you might not be getting the first down, but, you know, or the couple of times you were, but, you know, we went three and out so many times by being so pass happy, or would you rather put the ball in the hands of those guys and you have a much greater chance of them breaking one open? You know, that's kind of like the simplistic mindset, I think, that like needs to be involved here, because it's literally just the, you know, one plus one math of give the ball to your best players. And that just seemed to be what Michigan was so adept at.
Yeah. And even if you look at a team like Ohio State, right, and you got Marvin Harrison Jr., like, what do you think the other team's defense is trying to do? They're trying to keep the ball away from their best guy at all cost. What does Ohio State do? They find ways to get Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball. So we need to adopt that with Nick Singleton and Katron Allen. They're the best players, and you know, gotta let them cook. There's just no other way around it. And I'm all for having like two to three tight ends on the field and being physical. It's like, that's just my personality. Like if I'm doing a sport, like I'm going to beat you because I'm tougher. Like I'm not necessarily the most skilled person, like, or, you know, super finessey like that. Like when I do sport, like I'm just trying to impose my will on you. Like when I did track, like I wasn't like one of those, okay, I'm going to sprint in the last 100 yards and get the win. That happens sometimes, but like not very often. Like maybe like I would kind of sit back then half or two thirds of the way through the race, make a power move far away from the finish line and just like grind it out. And that's the way I ran. Cause my thing was, hey, I'm going to out tough you. I'm not going to chance a sprint. Not going to chance it. It's going to be a long, like a very, very long sprint, and it's going to grind and it's going to hurt. Like that's like the mindset I adopted, you know, toughness and pain essentially. But I'd like to see Penn State do a little bit more of that kind of nasty stuff in terms of, you know, just tough physical football like you see Michigan doing. I think that's something that would really work. I just love that style of play, the toughness and grinding it out. And I think running the ball, that's kind of, you know, the equivalent in the sport of football.
Yep, agreed. So Yep, Michigan goes home with the national championship for this year. We'll see, you know, whatever may come as far as investigations and stuff like that. But for now, Michigan is, you know, without asterisk, the national champion. So what do you think Jim Harbaugh's future is in college football? Do you think he's off to the NFL?
I don't know about that. Like, if you're the national champion, I think your natural thing is you're going to want to come back and repeat and keep on winning. Like, winning is a very addictive feeling. And, you know, Harbaugh is a Michigan alumni. Now, does he want to start over, like, at a program in the NFL, a franchise like the Chargers? Does he want to go out there and kind of start from scratch, or does he want to try to win some more national titles? And it's going to be kind of a fun challenge. I think it's going to be a new challenge with the 12-team playoff and the realignment of the Big Ten. And if you look at their schedule, like, next year, like literally, like, you know, the NCAA is going to do nothing, but, like, maybe the punishment for Michigan is that they have to play Ohio State and they have to play USC and Oregon and Texas. And, like, maybe that's karma's way of, like, trying to balance things out. And maybe Michigan will have, like, 5 losses next year just because of that brutal schedule. But yeah, part of me also doesn't understand, like, you know, the NCAA is not going to do anything. Like, they think that suspending the head coach for a couple games means anything. Like, they had Connor Stallions at the Alabama game.
Yep.
Like, they didn't do anything. Like, this guy's out there. And the point is, like, if you're not going to enforce a consequence on the rule, just, like, don't make it a rule. Just the less rules you have, the less rules there are to break. Like, if it's something that's not going to be enforced, just ignore it. Like, just don't have it in the rule book. Like, there's no need for it. Yeah. So that's kind of my rant. I think Coach Franklin's kind of agreed with this too. And it's just kind of one of those things that's kind of silly and nonsense, and kind of like with the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl when they were stealing, like, the Eagle signs in 05. And it was like, well, they lost a draft pick. They're still Super Bowl champions. Like, it's just one of those things that if you're not going to impose the consequence and keep them out of the playoffs or revoke the title, or, which I honestly don't even think. I think you really just need to not let the team play if that's the issue. But, you know, otherwise, teams are going to do whatever they want. Like, if there's no consequence, like, if you were to tell me, like, oh, like, you know, the speed limit there, it's against the rules. But if I were to get pulled over by a cop and get a warning every time, like, I'd speed all the time. Like, I know how safe I can drive my car despite a speed limit sign. Like, it's just, so it'd be silly, right? Like, if there wasn't a consequence for speeding. That's how this is here. Like, consequences, sure, are how you stop people from doing things, because people test the boundaries. That's human nature. Like, 90% of people follow rules. 10% of people really push the boundaries. And, you know, Michigan's in that 10%. And, you know, they got away, scot-free. So,
yeah, well said. Yeah, but on the Jim Harbaugh thing, I think he's off to the NFL for a couple of reasons. Number one is, I think, you know, just on a personal achievement side of thing at Michigan, like, I get that, you know, like, the desire or the appetite to try and repeat is there, but you'd be leaving when you're literally at the peak, you're at the mountaintop. Like, it literally does not get any better than what you just achieved, in my opinion. So that's number one. Number two is because of those continued, like, things from the NCAA. And that doesn't even include the sign stealing stuff. I'm talking about, like, the notice of allegations and stuff like that. Like, even though the, you know, the punishment is probably going to be the equivalent of a slap on the wrist, like, how much longer does he want to continue to be in these meetings and these conversations with investigators and stuff like that? Like, as opposed to just going out there and making a butt ton of money and coaching in the NFL again for the chance to win a Super Bowl, if, you know, if given enough time. So
this is something that he fell short against, right, his brother. And
yeah, exactly. So there's that. And, you know, as, like, a competitor, I'm sure that's been eating, like, at his mind, that, you know, that's something that he eventually maybe wants the chance to try and do again. So there's that. And also kind of going back to the like trying to repeat side of thing, like while I think that Michigan definitely would get back to the college football playoff, like with the expanded field, they're losing a ton of talent after this season. Like if you look at their depth chart, it is like almost 80% filled with seniors or graduate grade level, whatever you want to call it, players. So we're talking about almost their entire offensive line is probably gone. Blake Corum, gone. Donovan Edwards, not really sure. JJ McCarthy, not really sure. But across the defense, almost all of their linebackers are probably gone. Both of their safeties, gone. So it's their free safety, but their one corner and their strong safety. But so it's like you're talking about a lot of talent that they have to replace. And obviously it's not impossible. They did it with this squad here and they won a national championship. But those things combined, I just think that he's kind of done what he wanted to come out here to do. So I don't know, just like from a human level, I'm just like maybe he just wants a breath of fresh air now and just given, you know, $150 million check from some NFL owner to go and have his hand at the NFL again and just kind of leave somebody else to pick up like those headaches with the NCAA and such.
Yeah, definitely NCAA fatigue. You can potentially see being an issue. You saw it with Pete Carroll when he left to go join the Seahawks.
Exactly.
He had this opportunity a couple of years ago in terms of the Minnesota Vikings, and he's always had weird stuff like cheeseburgers and sleepovers with recruits, like just strains, like strange things.
It's not against the rules to sleep in the same room as a recruit. It's just freaking weird.
Yeah, it's just weird, right? Like, it's just always been weird stuff. But he went to the Minnesota Vikings for an interview, and then I believe he declined. I don't know if officially he was offered the job or not, but he ended up staying at Michigan and said, he's like, hey, I got the phone call. Just wanted to kind of feel it out. But he was like, hey, Michigan's the place I want to be. But what are your thoughts on that? Those conversations he had with Minnesota a couple years ago?
Well, I think the tenor of these conversations are different now because probably another reason why I think he's gone is that his stock is never going to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
very true.
Like, you know, he kind of comes in and he comes in and he could basically just right away just kind of say, I'm another like Mike Vrabel. I believe in running the football, being physical and doing all this stuff. And that's really kind of like what he did in San Francisco too, to a degree. I mean, they were a tough running team with Frank Gore and everything. So I could just see that value immediately being there. So I think he was definitely like, you know, he had those conversations. It's like those types of things are very hard to completely keep under wraps, like in today's sports media world. Somebody somewhere knows about everything and information spread so quickly. So I definitely think those conversations happened. I'd be curious to know, and we'll probably never know the full story behind it, whether or not the Vikings went in a different direction or Harbaugh turned them down. Maybe if he does come to the NFL, like that'll come to light. But yeah, I mean, to be completely honest, I think he and Las Vegas are like a match made in heaven. They're both crazy. So like it's almost like too perfect.
Well, it's funny too, because San Francisco and Oakland are so close to each other. And I mean, yeah, they're in Vegas now, but like, a lot of the fan base is from that same area. And I'm curious what their thoughts are about Harbaugh when he's coaching the 49ers and then to have him come over and coach the Raiders. So you think he's going to end up with Las Vegas?
Well, I think, you know, if I had to like peg one as like the most likely landing spot, that's the one, because like to go and give, like I said, like $150 million check to a college coach to come in after having to, you know, fire McDaniels the way that he did, like that's absolutely something that Davis would do.
So you don't think they're going to go with Antonio Pierce after he kind of turned their season around a bit?
No, because I mean, I don't know. That's just not something that, I mean, maybe they learn from their mistakes, but this is like Rich Bisaccia all over again. Like Bisaccia had them playing hard. They finished the season on like a high note and stuff like that. But I don't know. I would just, I would just find it kind of tough to think that they're going to buck that much history of making these kinds of decisions.
Yeah. So, you know, looking at this list here, number one job here, according to what's my website here?
Of NFL jobs?
Yeah. So I'm looking at this article here with jobs available in the NFL. But anyway, it has number one as the Washington Commanders. Do you think Harbaugh will end up in the NFC East?
Maybe. I mean, with that new ownership group, I definitely think there's some intrigue. All I know is that Josh Harris is not Dan Snyder. And the Commanders are doing, you know,
also like, one of the Sixers.
Yeah, exactly. And like, to our chagrin, Commanders are starting to interview assistant GMs from the Eagles, who, you know, notoriously have like a very solid foundation of good GM work and managing the cap and all that stuff. So they're becoming smarter as an organization. So I could see that possibly being a, you know, an appealing spot for sure. And like the division that you're in, I mean, is it really competitive compared to like maybe some other places? Like, sure, but you can always make that argument no matter like where you go. So I can definitely see the appeal.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's some
and on top of that too, like Josh Harris hired a couple of like really smart guys to like head up the coaching search. Like he nabbed that guy who previously worked with the Warriors, who was you know, a guy who like was basically one of the main architects of like the death lineup when they had it, and like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and all them. So like he's surrounding himself with guys who know sports, who know like good leadership and coaches and stuff like that. So that's what I mean. Like they just seem to be like kind of getting their stuff together. Like they're getting smarter.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got the Commanders. They like to run the ball with Brian Robinson and, mm-hmm. Antonio Gibson. So, you know, that's a potential fit. You have the Atlanta Falcons. I think that's, you know, possibility with Bijan Robinson. You really saw Arthur Smith not run the ball with him or pass the ball to Kyle Pitts. Like, so that's maybe he can turn that around and run the ball a little more there. Los Angeles Chargers. I think this one might be the most appealing if I was someone to be heading into a position like this. Like, you got Justin Herbert, really good. You got Austin Eckler and Keenan Allen.
But who's, I'm pretty sure Eckler is gone after this this season. Yeah.
He could be gone. So it's tough, but like the quarterback's the hardest position to find. And out of all teams on this list, I do think Justin Herbert's the best quarterback.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, like, and you want to talk about like location, LA?
Yeah, like, Sandy, yeah. Like, oh, I guess it's in LA now, yeah.
Ton of money like going into that franchise. Like they're building their own stadium and all that stuff. Like,
oh, really? They're building another one that's not SoFi?
I believe so. Yeah. I think, well, I don't know like what the plans are as far as construction on that goes, but there definitely were some mock-ups of what their own independent stadium would look like. So I think that's like their vision. So,
yeah, I mean, honestly, like, yeah, LA is the dream. Like, I went there for like a week and I was just like, for the professional development, I was just like, I should just move here. Like, it's January. I was like, it's January. It's like 70 and sunny. Like, I wake up, I went for like a run, and in the middle of the day, I could like just go out for a tan in January. And like, there's just like beautiful women everywhere. And like, you got the beach right there, the mountains. Like, I should just move out here and just like,
not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just whatever I'm doing, just go out. And then you look at the cost of living there and you're like, not a
maybe not
chance I can afford that.
Yeah,
because like, really, I don't think the teacher salary out there is that, can't be that. I mean, it is higher, but like in comparison to the cost of living, it's just not.
Yeah,
not even close, man.
Right.
But then you got the Raiders there, who are mm-hmm. fourth on the list. You think, you know, they've got things going with Josh Jacobs out there, and hey, you got Davante Adams, and Aiden O'Connell looks pretty good, and maybe they'll be trying to get some more quarterback competition there. You know, they had Jimmy G, which I don't think they had any crossover in San Francisco, I believe, because I think he was only with like Alex Smith and Kaepernick, and
yes,
and they kind of split ways. Then you got the Tennessee Titans, which I think that'd be a really good fit for him, having if Derrick Henry's still there, of course, which he very well might not be.
And I think Will Levis and Jim Harbaugh would actually make a great pair.
Oh, yeah, because Will Levis likes to run the ball. We know that from our time being a
physical, scrappy guy. Yep. Doesn't hate contact. Like, yeah, that's a Harbaugh quarterback.
Yeah. And I think really the only one on the list he's probably not super interested in is the Carolina Panthers. Like,
dude, they're a mess.
They're a mess. I do think that they could even beat the Eagles. I think like the only team they could beat is the Eagles. Cause like the Eagles, like there, I was like, there's no worse team in the NFL than the Eagles, man. Like it is just like,
true.
I can't believe, like, I'm just at a loss for words. Like it just keeps getting worse. Like they might lose like 100-0 in Tampa Bay. Like I'd be like, well, like they get worse every week. Like, what did I expect? Like what happened? Like, it's just one of those things. And like, but the Panthers, though, I think they're as close to the Eagles as you can get. But at the end of the day, like, Bryce Young's not looking like the guy. I mean, it is very early in his career, very successful at the college level. He could get better. Like, not a lot of talent around him. Like, obviously,
the problem, though, is they mortgaged the future to get him. They have, like, no, like, high-level draft picks year or next year.
The Bears absolutely fleeced them in this trade. Like, and it was like players on their roster are like him, Miles Sanders. I know they got Brian Burns, the defensive end.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Miles Sanders lost his starting role to Chuba Hubbard. I mean, I haven't been like paying super close attention to their situation, but
it's one of those things. Miles Sanders is injured all the time. Like you wonder why Howie Roseman didn't give him an extension. And that's why, like, for that price, if there's a high risk of you not playing games, like, it's not worth the money. And you got to, availability is the number one thing in the NFL. Like, you got to be able to compete. So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, where we're at there. I do think Los Angeles is probably the best bet. Maybe Atlanta for me. That's kind of what I'm seeing. And you're seeing Vegas and, you know, time will tell, and who knows? Maybe we're all just wasting our time, and it'll be back at Michigan. Like, we don't know.
Maybe. But so this is possibly a good segue. So a guy who definitely is not coming back to college football next season is one Nick Saban. He dropped the bombshell today that he is retiring from coaching after just what can only be called a legendary coaching career in college football. One, so many national championships at LSU. He got one. And then, of course, the six that he got at Alabama. The GOAT, the legend, the standard, whatever you want to call him. I mean, these are impossible shoes to fill. So, Vince, what were your thoughts when you saw the news come out?
It's kind of one of those things, like shock and disbelief, just because you've seen him in the sport for so long, and every coach is going to retire at some point. 99.99% of the time, it's just you don't expect it. And like when I saw that article pop up, I'm like, that can't be true. When I saw like the breaking news, and something else funny I saw, someone was like, I looked at this and at first I thought it was the transfer portal. Like that's how crazy the transfer portal has gotten. Like people literally see the Nick Saban news and are like, wait, he's in the portal. But then when I think about it more, I do think of some of the press conferences he's given, and like he just looks like so over it sometimes. Just when he's answering like the same questions over and over again, and yeah, I do think he looks a little bit burned out. And you know, he's reached the top of the mountain, and now Georgia's kind of the new team in the SEC. He got one last SEC championship before he went on his way out, and I think he's gonna be one of those guys who's gonna just want to take that easier, like more laid back path and just enjoy watching football instead of, you know, making it your life and obsessing over it. And yeah, I think he's going to be one of your commentators in the very near future.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you just like want to talk about a guy who just literally has nothing else left to prove. I mean, you just kind of get to the point where like that drive just naturally wanes, you know, and that's just human nature and wanting to kind of slow down. You start to think a little bit more about like spending time with your family and all that stuff. And I'm sure he's like a guy who, I mean, he's just like so smart, just like such a legend of the game that he's definitely probably not going to be too far away from it. Like I could definitely see a commentator spot, like you said, as well. It would be kind of interesting to me if maybe he kind of stays with the Alabama program in some kind of capacity, like maybe in like some sort of like advisor role, like kind of in the athletic department side of things. I don't know what the capacity for something like that might be, but yeah, I mean, just like total shock. I mean, you talk about like a guy who you can think all the way back to like those legendary games with Tim Tebow in the SEC championship game. And that was how many years ago? And he's going out having played in, you know, the final four team field of the college football playoff. I mean, just a guy who's literally accomplished everything that you can in the sport, like multiple Heisman Trophy winners, the whole bit. And I think it's not really unfair to say that these are impossible shoes to fill, but they are shoes that Alabama is hoping to fill quickly. I guess that the report out there is that they told the team they want to find and secure his replacement within like 3 days. So lots of names already being thrown out there. So I'll start with the funny one and then I'll ask you the serious one, Vince. So one guy who's on the short list of, you know, names to look out for the replacement at Alabama is James Franklin. So Vince, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely do you think it is that James Franklin leaves Penn State for Alabama? Or I'll even ask you this. What do you think, like between 1 and 10, what do you think the likelihood is that Alabama is going to offer him the job?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to say like -3.
I said -5. Yeah.
Yeah. there's no way this is happening. I did see a list of candidates, and I do think James Franklin was seventh on the list. I actually saw Kalen DeBoer up there at like number 5. And I think number 1 on the list was Dan Manning out of Oregon and Dabo Sweeney. I actually saw a meme that was like Dan Lanning and Dabo Sweeney meeting in the Tuscaloosa airport after they both said they would never leave their program.
Yeah, seriously.
So I do think that's up there. And I think another one, ironically, could be Lane Kiffin. He was an offensive coordinator there, had some success, and then left there to go head coach FAU and then back to Ole Miss, where he's having a lot of success and loaded up in the portal and players want to play for him. And if you can get the coach from one of your division rivals, like that is huge. And then you probably get all those Ole Miss transfers in the portal, and you're pretty much taking out like that would be like Penn State hiring like Ryan Day or something, like just taking all of Ohio State's players and just bringing them over here. Not that we're not trying to do that already with Julian Fleming, but you know, has to make it easier if you have the head coach moving from one program to the other. So
yeah.
What are your thoughts? Who do you think is going to be Nick Saban's replacement in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah. So I think the two names that are most likely are Dabo Sweeney and Dan Lanning. I think Sweeney is probably still the number 1 choice because of, you know, his having played there. He's won multiple national championships as a head coach in college football. I think the thing that is going to kind of knock him a little bit in terms of recency is, you know, the last like 2 seasons, Clemson hasn't been kind of the traditional power that it said it was. And like the time, like with Trevor Lawrence and with Deshaun Watson and everything like that. So, you know, they just haven't been like, they obviously haven't made the playoffs. They, you know, they just haven't been like to the same level as they've been now. Like, can Dabo like convince the powers that be at Alabama that, you know, he's like the man for the job? I think absolutely. He's still got like so much success under his belt, the alma mater aspect of it and stuff like that. So I would say he's probably like the most likely candidate in my mind. And I also think too, my dad actually made a pretty good point about this where he said he thinks that Nick Saban has to be like a part of this coaching search and kind of getting the fan base and the Alabama, you know, population, if you will, on board with the replacement, because basically nobody's going to be good enough. Like there's nobody out there outside of like maybe Kirby Smart that you could get, and everybody in like at the same time would be like, oh yes, this is the guy. Like this is who you get to replace Nick Saban.
Like, yeah, I feel like the Patriots with Bill Belichick are going to have the same thing happen if he steps away.
Yeah. So it's like, so you need to have Saban be a part of this and kind of say, like, if they come out and say, like, hey, we're hiring this guy, he has to also come out and be like, yes, like, they're right. This is the guy who is the best choice to lead Alabama in the future. Because, you know, with Saban's, like, seal of approval and his just kind of word out there, that can help, like, alleviate any immediate, like, oh, you're not Nick Saban sort of thing at Alabama in the next couple of years, while like a new head coach is like start, you know, trying to just kind of reestablish himself at Alabama. Cause I mean, like, while it is such an attractive job, it also it's like you're coaching against ghosts, you know, with Bear Bryant and now with Nick Saban. I mean, you're talking about like two of like the top five coaches of all time in college football, and you have to follow up those acts. Like, it's almost impossible. And it's, quite frankly, it can be intimidating, in my opinion. So, like I said, just circling back, I think Dabo's number one. Number two, I'm really high on Dan Lanning. I think that he is a great developer of culture. He's obviously very good at talent acquisition, just with the guys that he's been consistently pulling at Oregon, you know, just getting multiple quarterbacks in the portal, which, I mean, I think might be his biggest flex of all when it comes to like recruiting pitches and stuff like that. So, you know, I think though Oregon is going to make a huge push to keep him in Eugene. So I think he's going to get a fat check to stay with the Ducks, but we'll see.
Yeah, those are some good points. For me, if I'm Dan Lanning, I don't really know if I want the Alabama job. You got Oregon right there. You got Nike headquarters. You got a beautiful climate in the Pacific Northwest. You're surrounded by nature and trees. Like, I think part of that decision is you got to like where you're living, right? So I do think, like, just Oregon is awesome. Like, they've loaded up in the transfer portal. They've had an arms race. They've been really one of the stock up programs, in my opinion, up in Oregon. Got lots of great sports science up there with everything they got with Nike going on. So, like, it's just a good area to be for elite athletic performance, or really across all sports. It's a good place to be. I do think Dabo is a good candidate. Like, you've seen the drop off from, you know, Clemson. They just haven't been the same squad. And I actually, this might be a challenge too. Like, Dabo, I feel like, is similar to Saban in the fact that he doesn't really like the NIL stuff. And I know Saban was not a fan of the college football playoff expansion and the players playing more games. So I think that stuff was kind of another factor of like college football changing. And like you said, if Dabo Swinney is an Alabama alumni, was that correct?
Correct. He's not, yeah, he played for them.
Like, so I think that's like, you know, like, even if you're win a national championship, like, if you were a coach and you won a national championship for Virginia and you had the opportunity to come back to Penn State, even though like the Virginia job, like, you won a national championship, like, you'd go to Penn State, right? Like, I think, you know, people have that in their heart to go to their, you know, wherever they went to university, right? So I think that Dabo is definitely by far number one. Number two, I think, would be Lane Kiffin for me. I think they would want him at number one. I don't know if he would take it. They were kind of that program who gave him an opportunity after things didn't work out at USC. So, like, maybe that's a way that he pays them back, and, you know, maybe he brings all those transfer player portals with him, you know, from Ole Miss. So I think he's another really good candidate. I think Kalen DeBoer might actually be one out of Washington, just because they're losing a lot of talent and he's a good culture guy, and they might need to really do a lot to rebuild that roster. And yes, I do think the Pacific Northwest is a lot better location, but in terms of resources that you're getting, I do think Washington to Alabama is a really good opportunity. And we don't know where Washington's going to be next year after probably losing Michael Penix Jr. to the draft. And I can't imagine he has any eligibility left despite like all the injuries and COVID year and et cetera, et cetera. So those are kind of the guys I'm looking at. And then saw this in a meme as well. And like, one millionth on the list, you have like Deion Sanders and like Lincoln Riley at USC. Like,
there you go.
They were like listed at like 1 million and like 1 million and one on this like list. So for me, those are the favorites. And I think Jeff Brohm actually would be another potentially good candidate, but he's a Louisville alumni, so I don't know if he's going to want to leave his alma mater. So that's just maybe a name in the back of my head I thought might do a good job. So
yeah,
those are kind of my thoughts.
Good stuff. Yeah. I think the, you know, all those points you made are completely valid about like Oregon and like climate and location and all that stuff. What I think can help sway somebody to go to Alabama is a couple extra zeros on a check that yeah, pulled from the Alabama faithful.
How much more is it going to be than Oregon, though? Like, Oregon
it's
is
the South, dude. It's the SEC. There's so much money.
So much old money. Yeah, you're right. But
we'll see.
Well, time will tell. We'll see. I feel like I had one more, but blank.
Ryan Day.
Actually, Ryan Day might not be a terrible candidate.
I think Alabama would hate to have Ryan Day.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be a good fit there. Another one potentially that I saw on the list was Brian Kelly. Do you think they get their second consecutive coach from LSU?
Yeah, LSU will do what they need to keep him. They got tons of money too. They don't want him going anywhere.
Yeah, so okay, LSU off the list. Noted. All right. Well, I think we got most
everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, mostly every. Oh, I saw Steve Sarkisian was on the list. This is the one I was thinking of out of Texas.
Oh, out of Texas. Yeah. You know, but it's same deal. It's like what is Alabama going to offer him in terms of like money, resources, boosters, and all that stuff that Texas doesn't? I mean, if there's if there's any state or area of college football that can outmatch the SEC in that regard, it's any school in Texas.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with you there. Like, I feel like Texas is kind of like Penn State, where like even when Texas was like having some rough years and they were like 6-6, 7-5, like those Texas fans like all showed up in support of their team, like kind of like Penn State did like when we weren't very good. So
exactly,
very passionate fan base, similar to Penn State fans.
Agreed. Okay. So I think that we, you know, kind of talked ad nauseum about Nick Saban. I mean, obviously just huge bombshell news for college football entirely, but we do have some Penn State football specific news that we definitely got to cover here. We already talked about Penn State landing their first big fish in the transfer portal and Julian Fleming adding just a huge addition to the wide receiver room. So Penn State dipped back into the former Pennsylvania five-star recruit pool again and landed themselves one Nolan Rucci, offensive tackle from Wisconsin. And this is another story very similar to Julian Fleming. He was the number one recruit out of Pennsylvania. Penn State was gunning for him super hard. There were so many things that made sense for Rucci to go to Penn State. His dad played at Penn State under Joe Paterno. His mom also went there. There are season ticket holders for Penn State football. So all the stars aligned, but he ultimately chose to go to Wisconsin because his brother played there. He wanted to play with his brother, so can't really fault him for that. But his brother, I believe, is graduating out of the program after this season. So Rucci spent a very small amount of time in the portal before he decided to go to the Nittany Lions now. And he is on campus right now as we speak, taking classes. So what do you think, Vince? Another huge piece, an offensive tackle, a guy who, like when he was coming out of high school, a lot of guys on the recruiting side of things said that this is a first round pick.
Yeah, this is a huge get for Penn State. I remember just being devastated. He's from your area in the Lancaster area.
Yep.
And I was like, Andrew, go to his high school game, do whatever it takes, get him to go there. Like, it was devastating when he picked Wisconsin over us. And it's just like, Wisconsin? Like, you could play at Penn State, man. But understandable that he wants to play with his brother. Curious why his brother's not here. Potentially.
I don't know. Maybe
his brother's not as good and like Penn State did try to recruit him. Like, who knows?
It could be a positional thing too. I think his brother plays like fullback.
Okay. Yeah. And Wisconsin and those Midwestern schools, they're pretty old school. They like to run the ball a lot. So fullback could be needed. But yeah. Thrilled to have this guy back, and we talked about running the football. And if you have a guard like Rucci, like And we talked about wanting to be a team who's going to, you know, maul you and steamroll you and maybe like Dan Campbell-esque, be like biting kneecaps off. Like,
this is the kind of guy you need.
This is the guy you need. Like, he's strong. He's physical. He's tough. Good in pass protection. Like, this is a big get for Penn State.
Absolutely. So, yeah, addressed another huge area of need for Penn State, losing both of their starting tackles after the season, in addition to the help for on the wide receiver side. Another area that we both spoke about Penn State needing some additional help in the transfer portal is at the cornerback spot, with Penn State losing all three of their starting cornerbacks to the NFL draft in King, Dixon, and Hardy. And Penn State did not disappoint. Now, we're speaking a little bit on the speculative side of things here so far, but so Penn State hosted a couple of very highly touted cornerback transfer recruits in Tony Grimes, who was another guy that Penn State wanted really badly out of high school. He ultimately chose to go to UNC. He bounced to Texas A&M. He entered the portal again. He ultimately chose now, at least at the time being right now, to transfer to Michigan State. These things are so fluid. Like, guys are changing their minds all the time. So we'll see if that fully sticks. But the rumor mill has it right now that Penn State has actually added a couple of very highly touted cornerbacks to their program in the likes of AJ Harris and Jalen Kimber. So AJ Harris is a former five-star cornerback recruit who chose to go to Georgia. He was not originally recruited by Penn State when he was out of high school. He's originally from Alabama. He chose to go to Georgia. He appeared in, I believe I saw it was 8 games, and he entered the transfer portal. And the reason why people are saying that he is kind of a de facto part of the Nittany Lions now is because he's appearing on the student directory at Penn State. So we're kind of waiting on like an official announcement or, you know, just kind of like that confirmation from AJ, but that is there. And another guy, similar situation, is Jalen Kimber. Jalen, this will be his second time transferring. He originally started at Georgia, went to Florida, and has entered the portal again. But similar to Harris, he is listed in the student directory at Penn State. He was a former 4-star recruit at cornerback, highly recruited guy in the SEC. I mean, like, the SEC, you know, they go out and they get those athletic corners, man. So if it's true that both of these guys are going to be joining the program, I think that that's amazing for Penn State. For, you know, just from the sheer standpoint that you're injecting talent, like, that's never a bad thing. And now you have the option to move Miller or Tracy to that nickel corner spot and, you know, kind of maintain some continuity and some physical play there that Daquan Hardy did so well. So I ranted for a little while there. Vince, what are your thoughts?
Big gets at corner, man. Kimber from Florida, that's huge. Getting AJ Harris, a 5-star corner out of Georgia, like, that's awesome, man. Like, we talked about, hey, we need two starting corners. We got 2 starting caliber corners right there, 2 out of 3. So that's not bad in terms of batting average when you're trying to get these recruits. Obviously, would have been a grand slam if they also got Tony Grimes. Do you think AJ Harris has any relation to Ryan Harris, who played for the Denver Broncos? Like, I feel like this is a new thing where, like, Vince says, like, oh, like, there's a corner. Wasn't his dad also like a corner in the NFL?
Right. Maybe. I don't know. We'll have to save that for a different pod and figure that out.
Yes. Yeah. That's my thoughts. It's a position of need, highly touted recruits, and shows that, you know, Happy Valley United and NIL, whatever they're doing, seems to be working and paying off for Penn State athletes.
Yeah, it's the writing's on the wall. So, I mean, we'll see what else kind of comes out of this. I believe the portal has closed now, so I'm not sure exactly how much more movement we can expect here in the short term, but we'll continue to obviously keep our eyes on it and continue to report and give our thoughts. But you got anything else on this, Vince, or do you want to start to kind of wrap things up here?
Yeah, you never know how things are going to end up in the portal. You saw Devin Carter and Storm Duck end up leaving around this time when they had committed to Penn State. So, you know, there's ways in the portal. Things can change depending on your playing time, what players think they're going to get. So a lot of things can change, but Andrew, do you want to tell the folks how they can help us out here at the Nittany Blues podcast?
Would love to. So I would say the number one way that you can help us out here is by leaving us a review on wherever you listen to our podcast, whether that is on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, but anywhere that you listen to the podcast, if you could leave us a review, that really does help. It helps expose us to a wider audience, get us out there in front of other Nittany Lion fans, other Penn State fans. So that's insanely helpful. Another great way is to visit our website, nittanyblues.com. You can listen to all of our previous episodes in addition to the one that you're listening to right now. You can learn a little bit more about how you can support the show from a financial standpoint. Definitely never anything that we expect. We love doing this each and every week, and we will continue to do this each and every week. But you know, if it's something that you enjoy and you want to hear more and maybe help us do some other cool things content wise, that's a great way. And you can also check out our merch at shop.nittanyblues.com. We have some cool stuff that we pretty much guarantee you'll find nowhere else. So definitely worth a look there. But that's all I got, Vince.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, with the thing online, like you said about donations, it's like a little virtual tip jar for us.
So exactly.
If you love us and appreciate the work we do, we would definitely appreciate, you know, any donations if you're willing and able. But yeah, definitely check out the merch store. A lot of cool designs. You got the classic pink and black. You got the Lawn Boys. We got a Nick and Katron coming back for probably their last season. So that's one you'll definitely want to have. And as always, we love you guys. Thank you for listening. And we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues Podcast. We'll see you next time.